Good morning. I'm speaking with Connor Eccles, who is a reporter for Responsible Statecraft, a publication by the Quincy Institute. He was previously the managing editor of the Non-Zero newsletter, and his work has appeared in The Intercept, The New Arab, and Washington Post Opinions. Today, we're talking about some of the deep relationships between the United States and Israel, and how these connections affect U.S. policies. Welcome to KABU, Connor Eccles.
Thank you for having me, Lori.
Well, you've published a series of important articles in Responsible Statecraft, which we'll link to on the Old Mole Variety page on the KABU website. But let's start with what you call the increasing mind meld between security agencies in Israel and the United States. What has been the relationship between federal agencies such as ICE and Customs and Border Patrol with their counterparts in Israel?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started looking into this story as I think a lot of commentators were making comparisons between what we saw from American security officials in Minnesota to what had happened in the West Bank over the years, and found that there's actually quite a lot here. You could split it into two things. So there's this official cooperation and then informal cooperation driven by NGOs. On the official side, the US has consistently over the years, since creating DHS as a separate entity following 9/11, organized trainings alongside Israeli security officials at which American ICE and CBP officers learned an Israeli approach to counterterrorism. They have funded research by Israeli officials about things like countering violent extremism in the 2010s and had them present on that at conferences involving ICE and CBP officials. And they've also, due to Congress's involvement in particular, had a great deal of technology transfer. We're talking about, surveillance technology and other things that are purportedly for dealing with terrorism, but in the case of ICE and CBP, are used often to deal with migrants or with protesters, including technologies from Israeli companies like Cellebrite and Paragon, which allow you to hack into phones without a password. And then on the other unofficial side, you have NGOs and American organizations like the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, or JINSA, the Jewish Institute for National Security of America, both of which have aligned themselves over the years very much with the right wing of Israeli policy. And they, for the last couple of decades, have sponsored trips for all sorts of senior American law enforcement officials to Israel to learn from their Israeli counterparts. And, some of the people who've gone on those trips include now senior officials within these organizations. So, for example, I believe that it's Joseph Har-Hay, who's now an assistant chief for CBP, and he attended one of these with JINSA back in 2018, I believe. So you've got both this official and unofficial sort of strand that has just slowly brought the cultures of these security states together.
Well, you have some pretty horrifying quotes from some of the participants, some of the American participants who have noted that, they were surprised by the kind of level of violence that Israeli security agencies used against Palestinians. Do you want to say any more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So those quotes were originally reported by Jewish Currents, so just want to give credit there. But it's very notable that I guess it's useful to think of this as the shift between when law enforcement officials think of themselves as dealing with criminals versus terrorists. For example, that's what we're talking about in what we saw in Minnesota is when you're framing the enemy as a terrorist, you use much more expansive force, and that is the type of force that Israeli officials have used against Palestinians that they see as terrorists over the years. So that's really what I think a lot of the difference is here, and a lot of the sort of framing difference.
Well, especially since, people are always pointing out that ICE officials or people hired by ICE these days have less and less training. But certainly the level of violence directed against migrants, legal and perhaps not undocumented, as well as U.S. citizens. These kinds of Israeli counterterrorism tactics are showing up in places like Minnesota, which we witnessed fairly recently. And so, how have these counterterror tactics applied to an ever-growing number of people in the United States?
Yeah, again, that is a lot as much in this rhetorical and sort of operational shift from the Trump administration as anything. There's also great reporting from other people that I linked to in the piece about how just law enforcement in general has taken on some more of this mission over the years, including the people that have gone and done trainings over in Israel. But just, in general, the framing of, obviously Kristi Noem is no longer going to be the head of the Department of Homeland Security, but she would frequently describe people who had been killed, who were activists or who were doing work around the protests as terrorists or as, trying to assist in terrorist activities. And so it's just this ever-expanding sort of target set for the national security state. And it seems as if it might continue to expand as the Trump administration pursues war on terror at home and abroad.
And we see this use of extreme force and racial and ethnic profiling that really reflects how Israel is using these same tactics against Palestinians.
Yes, that's right. That's a particular thing that I spoke with a former senior DHS official about, and they were very concerned. I mean, even they saw a presentation from an Israeli counterterrorism expert at some sort of seminar or some sort of conference that they attended during their time at DHS, and they were talking to another one of their colleagues, and just the colleague said, "Why are we giving a foreign government funding to tell us to do this? Why is DHS doing this?" And I think it's galling to a lot of people within the national security state as well as without.
Well, let's discuss the U.S.-Israel war on Iran. Many people have asked this question: why exactly did the administration launch a regime change war in Iran? And was it Israel that pushed the U.S. into war, or a joint effort by the two countries to maintain their hegemony in the region? And I've read and listened to a lot of geopolitical analysts who have been debating the degree to which Israel pushed Trump into going to war. From your research and reporting, what are your conclusions?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a chicken or the egg problem because obviously it's always going to be a little bit of both at the end of the day. But it was interesting that the day after the war broke out, I went to a conference sponsored by J Street, which is a self-described, I guess, progressive pro-Israel organization that has a pretty significant influence both in Washington and elsewhere. And so I was at that conference, and one of the panels, there was a debate on this very question. And on one side, the argument was, well, look, if Israel didn't exist, if there was no, Israeli interest to defend in the Middle East, if the US was not interested in defending those interests, then we would have no reason to go after Iran. Because after all, Iran has weapons that can only reach within its region. It has never made a credible threat to the US homeland. So it takes a very expansive view of US interests to view that as necessary. But another panelist who's very interesting, or your listeners may be interested in him as well, Matt Duss from the Center for International Policy, former advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders, and he made the argument that this lets the US off the hook. Right, that there is sort of in the way that I described with the Department of Homeland Security, there's a certain mind meld between a part of the Israeli security establishment and a part of the American security establishment that at the end of the day agrees on the principle that the US should be the dominant force in the Middle East and that the primary threat to that dominance is Iran, and that Israel should be sort of our sheriff on the ground. Making these things happen. Now, in the very sort of fine-grained details of what actually led to this particular war, that's what was really funny is that the Trump administration was making it seem ambiguous on this question, right? Because you had Marco Rubio come out and say that, well, Israel was going to attack, they had their opportunity, and so we needed to attack as well. So that's sort of the more fine-grained and proximate thing. And I think that the timing very much was driven at least as much by Israel as the US, but it's sort of hard to pin all of it on Israel given America's overwhelming power.
And history in the region.
Right.
Well, it seems to me that this is all related to Gaza too, is it not? I mean, why does the United States continue to support a genocide there, and now an accelerated ethnic cleansing in the West Bank? I mean, settlers are executing families. Nothing's stopping them, or no one is stopping them. So increased violence in the West Bank now as well. But yet the United States, really continues to support Israel's genocide.
Right. Now, I appreciate you bringing in the West Bank because that's often ignored in these conversations, the ongoing displacement of Palestinians in the West Bank. And I've been there. I've been there on several visits over the years. And I think it's a little hard for people to picture from a distance the extent to which it is so thoroughly divided between, Israelis and Palestinians and the way that Israelis live in these settlements. They have their own roads, they have total impunity, really, in the West Bank against local Palestinians, and that's such a big problem. In terms of the question of if how the is it how the war relates to the how the war in Iran relates to the war in Gaza?
Well, I guess I'm just reflecting about this question about is it Israel's policies and efforts that push the United States into war with Iran or a joint effort? And I think that question also applies to Gaza or Palestinians as well, that the United States is also linked so closely linked with Israel, it's difficult to separate. Who's supporting whom? But certainly, but both countries are, this axis of evil in the region. As so many Americans have turned away from supporting Israel because of its live stream genocide and militarism, now we see in Lebanon, and the growing concern over Israel's control or influence on US politics. Israel is increasing its investments in influencers of all kinds on social media, in controlling the mainstream US media, and expanding Christian Zionism. And I think, as you've probably pointed out, there are more Christian Zionists than Jewish Zionists in this country. So you've written about how an Israeli-funded organization is working to boost evangelical support for Israel. Can you tell us about this operation?
This is a truly strange story that I co-wrote with my colleague Nick Cleveland Stout, who also does excellent, he's done a lot of great reporting. So he's always right on the story. But basically what we found was that this organization called Show Faith by Works, which is registered as a foreign agent on behalf of Israel with the federal government. So this is an explicit agent-client relationship between the Israeli government and this group. They have tried a few different methods for trying to sort of propagandize pro-Israel views to especially young evangelicals, because there's a really deep fear from the Israeli government that they're losing young people across the board, and that includes young conservatives and Republicans often, and young evangelicals who might have supported Israel once upon a time, but who no longer see that as a valid point of view, either because they sympathize more with the Palestinians or they just want America to stop spending a bunch of money and doing a bunch of dumb stuff abroad. And so what they've done most recently now is launched this Bible study program, of all things, called the Storyline of Israel, run by, so it's Hear From Us, and then the Storyline of Israel is this sub thing. So they're sort of rebranding because they got some bad press. Well, we gave them some bad press a few months ago. And so there's been a lot of pushback from evangelicals because there was talk of them, geofencing churches during services to do targeted ads and stuff like that. But now they've got this program that sort of purports to show the real story of Israel, connects the Bible to modern Israel and allow people to deepen their experience of faith through that. But the problem is that it's just a really thinly veiled propaganda thing, right? The interviewees you would think would be normal Christian theologians doing, various things to talk about modern Israel. But instead, it's people like Yishai Fleischer, who is one of the loudest and most extreme voices of the settler movement in the West Bank, who has consistently called for the expulsion of all Palestinians from Gaza and complained that Qatar won't take them, for example. Yeah, he had like a podcast episode entitled "Gazans Gotta Go" to give you a sense of his demeanor.
Very Christian-like, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so you've got all these just over the top personalities and ones who have nothing to say about Christian theology necessarily in a way that would be appropriate for a Bible study, but instead it's really just trying to say that Israel is in some way essential to modern Christianity, and that is a deeply disputed position among Christians.
Yeah, as you report, there has been some pushback by many of these evangelical churches. I mean, resenting the geofencing campaign and this kind of foreign influence.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I mean, any faith group is going to be frustrated at the idea of being targeted as a faith group for this type of thing, right? I'm sort of surprised that these guys are surprised that they've gotten so much pushback, right? It's a very unusual thing to try to shape the theological views of people who don't share your religion. So yeah, that's just been extremely controversial. And again, like I said, a lot of young evangelicals today are similar to a lot of young Americans saying that we do not want our tax dollars to go supporting Israeli war crimes. And it's hard to argue with them.
Yeah, and it just underscores the level to which the Israel government is trying to influence all manner of communities in the United States to support Israeli policies.
Right.
Finally, Connor, you've noted that a coalition of human rights organizations, anti-war groups, and Christian churches are urging the U.S. to cancel its $210 million purchase of next-generation cluster munitions from an Israeli state-owned company, citing the severe foreseeable dangers these weapons pose to civilians. I mean, what do you make of this purchase? And I'm wondering if it reflects another way that Israel influences U.S. policies in encouraging or engaging in warfare that does not consider civilians.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't think that you need to do too much to convince Pete Hegseth-led Department of Defense to ignore those things, but there is definitely a pattern here. Cluster munitions were banned by the vast majority of countries in the 1990s because they are inherently dangerous to civilians. They leave behind all these little bomblets that infamously resemble toys. And that when they're unexploded are often picked up specifically by children, and it specifically maim and kill children. So it's an indiscriminate weapon, and it's a very scary weapon. But the US made the decision to never sign on to that particular convention that banned the use of cluster munitions. And so we maintained a stockpile of them, even though we stopped using them in operations in the late 2000s. And during the Ukraine war, the US made the decision under Biden to transfer cluster munitions to Ukraine for use on the front lines, which seems to have depleted our supplies of these weapons. And now we're looking to refill them by getting this contract with an Israeli company. And also, as I note in that story, we are seeking buyers within the United States. We're seeking m weapons manufacturers within the United States to manufacture the same model. So yeah, I mean, I think we're probably entering an era in which cluster munitions are going to be used again in a way that has proven to be disastrous historically everywhere that they've appeared.
Well, we've got to fight back, and we really appreciate your excellent reporting, Connor Eccles, for helping us do that and for joining us today. We'll link to some of your pieces from Responsible Statecraft on the KABU website.
Okay, well,
Thanks
thanks so
again.
much. I appreciate it.